Hi, and welcome to our podcast. It's Jocelyn and Dr. Mari again today. Hi, Mari.
Hello.
Anyway, today we're going to talk about beliefs and perception. Mari and I had a long conversation before we started this podcast regarding how perceptions and beliefs actually cloud what we're experiencing. They cloud our experience. And beliefs and perceptions are actually something that are pre-programmed into us from before birth. And then during our very, very early years, we're picking up a lot of subliminal signals, both overt and covert, from our parents and our environment. And a lot of people have a problem understanding and finding the root of their beliefs and their perceptions. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how to find that. We're also going to talk a lot about what happens when we believe and perceive things that really aren't there. So when people are in relationships, whether it be a relationship with a coworker or a boss or romantically, even with family members, we have a lot of reactions that we have that are pre-programmed. And then we go out into the world and we have these experiences and someone looks at us weird. We think, oh my God, that person hates me. Or we think, oh my God, my boss is going to fire me. Why did my boss look at me like that? Did somebody talk behind my back? Oh, I bet you it was so-and-so. And pretty soon we've built this incredibly ugly building per se. And we say to ourselves, that's real. And it's sort of like a monstrosity in our mind, and it disrupts our energy, it disrupts our thoughts, it disrupts our feelings, and we begin to carry that. And when we carry that, we begin to project that out into the field, and everybody else picks it up. And part of the problem is, and I know that I have experienced this myself, I don't even know that I'm doing it until I'm feeling sick. Until I'm feeling like, oh my God, I need to calm down. I need to breathe. Maybe I need to have a glass of wine. Maybe I need to go for a bike ride. Maybe I need to talk to all my friends 40,000 times about this. And I realize that I'm out of control. And for me, I've done a lot of inner work, and I have a lot of inner work to keep doing. I think that we all do. I don't think that we ever stop growing and learning about ourselves. But I think also that many people ask, how do you find the core or the root of a belief? And I know that it's layered. It's like an onion. And so I'm going to propose that to you. For example, when you know this because you have many people that are reacting to something outside of them, not because it's actually happening and not because they're thinking about how can I solve this, but they're thinking, how can I protect myself? How can I fight back? How can I... Right. So how would you begin with helping somebody uncover their beliefs and perceptions about the outer world?
You know, sometimes I feel like I'm a broken record because I say the same things, just different ways. You know, it's kind of vantage point where you know how you see it. But really, it's taking the time to examine the belief. Like, where do my beliefs come from? How did I even get here? Right. So one thing that happens a lot, especially I live in the Bible Belt. In the Bible Belt, I have young people that have a crisis of faith, right? They're like, I don't know if I believe what I believe because I don't know why I believe it, right? And then parents will call me freaking out that I've done something to their kid. I'm like, I didn't do anything to their kid. It's just that we get to this place where we start saying, where did this come from? Okay, I believe the Bible, but why? Is it because I've read it for myself, because I've studied it for myself, or because I grew up in the church? And when I grew up in the church, generally that's when people have to start examining, do I truly believe this, or it's just a habit. It's a habit of mine, right? So I start by saying we have to examine where do our habits, because people can't really think about the word belief. Like, I don't know what I believe in. I don't know what that is. What are your habits and how did you get them? So if my habit is to turn all the lights on when I get in the house, where did that habit come from? Is that what my mom did? Or is it because I like a well-lit room? Well, if it's because I like a well-lit room, that's my belief. If it's because my mom always did it, it's my mom belief beliefs that I have inherited.
Okay, yes, I understand that. But it's also, what about the fears that people have? And they begin, and first, in order to be able to examine a belief, we have to see what we're doing that's causing the problem.
Sure.
And many, right, so what I find is many, I hear it. People don't even know that they're saying it.
Right.
And they'll say, oh, story of my life. When is right. this ever going to end? What's next? And I was telling you a story earlier, during the recession, and I was in commercial real estate. And when I tell you it was a recession, I mean, it was a recession. I remember I said to my brother, who was one of my mentors in real estate, God, what's next? And he said, stop saying that. And I was shocked because he never talked to me like that before. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, you keep saying what's next. He said, keep asking that and you're going to keep getting more of it. And I didn't even realize it. And that moment on, I mean, it really got under my skin because of the way he told me, it rattled me. And it put me in a position to really examine what I was thinking. And I stopped saying that. And about 4 or 5 days later, I noticed that everything had changed. I had more hope. I had more power because I was behind what I wanted instead of, negating and being my own victim. And so for people that come to you and say to you, oh, God, Mari, story of my life, right? I always pick the wrong man. Why do women always leave me? Why do I always get fired from a job? All my coworkers hate me. Nobody likes me. I don't know why this happens to me. Victim. That's the victim. I'm not responsible for this, or I am responsible for this, but please show me why. How do we help them understand before they say, oh my God, this is a belief? Because a lot of people don't even know that they have these beliefs. They're like, that's not a belief. This is just normal life. And it's like, no, honey, those are beliefs.
Right, right. So yeah, so I guess when you ask me, how do you examine these things? When we're in the crisis mode, right? All these things keep happening to you. This is the story of my life. I call that the crisis mode. Doesn't mean you're in an actual crisis, but your brain is in this, I just can't figure this out. You know what? This is just my lot in life. This is how it's going to be. Most people struggle with understanding that they've created some of that. Right? They don't want to hear that. That's the last thing they want to hear, is that it's their fault somehow. Even though, like you just said, once you changed your belief system around, the recession and what you said and how you saw it, things changed. So I often try to work with people on the positive side of beliefs. The little basic things, that no one sees as a belief. They just see it as something they do. Like I said, turning on the lights, right? Now, if I can understand if most of what you do is based on what you inherited, then I can say this is someone else's belief system that you're sitting in. It's like sitting in someone else's skin. It's never going to really fit.
Yeah, we inherit beliefs and behaviors and attitudes and then perceptions without even being aware of it. Exactly.
Right, without even being conscious at all. And we believe that this is us. And so sometimes that whole belief system is what's creating the, dismay they have in their life. And then they do blame themselves, or they do believe this is just their lot in life. Well, I'm like, well, that's not even your belief system. That's not how you truly believe. Or if you do believe that, it's from, like you said, a faulty place. It's from fear. It's from anger. It's from disappointments. And we rationalize those things really to keep us safe. We rationalize that we're not, a ball of nerves all the time. If I can say to myself, this is my lot in life, it actually makes it okay. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of anxiety is caused from early childhood downloads, you know, of, oh my God, I'm ashamed. I don't feel good about myself. But we can't run around and go, I don't feel good about myself. We wear a mask and we're like, no, I've got to show up. I've got to look good. And underneath, you're a ball of nerves. You're a mess. I know, because I had been there. And I tell a story, and it's funny. I don't tell it often, but I'm going to tell it publicly on the podcast.
For everybody to hear.
Yeah. There was a time in my life that if I was in a grocery store and I was holding groceries and the line was too long, I would literally start to panic. It would scare me. I would start to sweat, you know, go into that space where I thought, I'm going to faint. I'm going to die. I'm going to embarrass myself. I would put my stuff down in line and walk out of that store. I didn't care. And eventually I had to get a hold of myself and I had to look at myself. And I got so sick of it because I didn't want to be that way anymore. Other people could stand in line in a grocery store and be totally chill. And be patient. And I realized I was impatient with myself. I was impatient, right? In loving myself, and I was critical of myself.
And where did and that come from, that you don't deserve patience?
It came from my childhood. It came from my upbringing. Right. You know, I come from an Italian family. Everybody talks over everybody else. Everybody's really loud. They just love differently. Right. And I was, you know, a lot more sensitive, and I took things in the way it took things in. I'm not going to blame anybody for it.
No.
It is what it is. You know, what my parents went through, their parents went through, and so on. And it was passed down to me. And I really believe that our job is to heal our ancestral wounds. And right. people will say, but that's not mine. It absolutely is yours.
It absolutely is yours, right.
You know, I really believe that when a father and mother come together, the state of mind and the energy state that they are in on many different levels, mentally, spiritually, and physically, and when they actually have sex and they conceive that child, I believe that those energies are part of it. And you actually have the energies from your long gone ancestors. And then you come in with your own. So you are responsible for you.
Right.
And you are part of that. And I'm not, that's why I say I don't blame. And so I got to the place where I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I was sick of myself.
Right.
And I thought, I'm a stand in line. And if I fall over, awesome. I don't care, because there's got to be more love in this world than me being afraid of everyone and everything around me as if they're judging me. Nobody even notices you half the time in line.
Half the time, they do not.
But we believe, oh my God, everybody's looking at me. Oh my God, I think I'm going to throw up. No, actually, I'm dizzy. I think I'm going to pass out. I mean, and that is a horrible state to live in. And instead of us being able to face it, we start to take pills. And I'm telling you, pills are great. But eventually you have to wean yourself off of them if you can. And if you can't, that's okay. You still have to be aware if you want to live a better life, right?
Right.
And there was a young friend of mine, he's 23, and he was on antidepressants. And it took him a long time to come out of his angst. Right? But as he started to grow and as he started to realize that he was okay, like he didn't even want to drive on the freeway.
Right.
He was afraid. So I would say, drive in the slow lane. Okay, that's a good idea. And so, you know, he would drive in the slow lane. I don't think I want to go out with all those people. And it was like, go, have a drink. You're old enough to do it. He's like, you know, I had a really good time. We went to the movies last weekend and he said, did I tell you that I dropped from 150 to 50 milligrams? And he said, you know what's interesting? I feel more. I feel a deeper sense of what life is like, where I was numb. And I was numbing my fear, right? And his fear came from his beliefs that at the time he was overweight. I mean, the kid lost 80 pounds and he did it all by himself. Yeah. He, you know, his parents brought him a treadmill. He walks that treadmill every day for an hour and a half. He started eating all vegetarian, you know, omitting cheese and omitting a lot of carbohydrates, and he lost 80 pounds. And he's really a good-looking kid, and he got his master's degree, and he got hired at a really great firm in San Francisco. And so I watched him grow because he had the desire. And we lock ourselves up a lot of times, I think. And so, you know, what I'm asking, I think, you specifically is, half the time we're in a state of anxiety
right.
about Why am I like this? Why is everybody rejecting me? Why does this keep happening to me? You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And those questions right there, if we can catch ourselves, and that's my question to you. How does one catch themselves? For me, you know, mine was my brother slapping me and saying to me, wake up, listen to what you say to yourself. And I'll tell you, I don't say stuff like that to myself anymore. I just know. But how does one do that? And I know our friends need to point it out to us, but a lot of times our friends don't hear it because they say it. So how does someone become aware? That's my question to you. How do you become aware? Oh my God, that's my belief. Oh my God, what am I thinking? Oh my God, I'm in a total state of panic and anxiety. What? How did they get there to say, I am this right now?
Right. So, you know, that's in the mindfulness work, right? It is in the being present with yourself. I recommend people journal, and not journal like you get a, you know, a notebook and you write your whole day and all that other stuff. I mean, really, it is a piece of paper that you have by you all the time and you check in with yourself. So even if you set an alarm on your phone every hour, you check in and say, how am I feeling? What is happening with me? Right? And that will help us understand where beliefs fit into all that. So if I'm just dilly-dallying going along my day and nothing's wrong, okay, fine, that's fine. But then the moment where, like you said, the boss sends you a text and your heart starts beating out of your chest all because the boss said, call me, that's a different story. I want to know why that's occurring. What is the thought that goes with that? Not just the feeling, but the thought. Is it, oh crap, I'm in trouble? If it's, oh crap, I'm in trouble, where does that message come from based on that text?
So everybody should have a calendar in their phone, right?
Yeah.
And you can actually set your calendar to alert you every hour on the hour at whatever time you choose. But every hour, just say for 8 hours. And it would be a really great thing if you could type in, today is great. Right. And then maybe at 9:30 in the morning, you go, God, you know what? I'm so pissed off at Andrea. Right. I hate her. She's making my life difficult. Write that down. That's really important because you're right. It is part of the mindfulness work. And then you can use that to revise at night. You go back through your day and revise your day.
Right.
In your energy field, in your imagination. I like that. And so maybe they could even write in there, oh my God, you know, at 4 o'clock today, the boss texted me, I've got to go see him at 4:30. I'm scared. You know, what's going on? Well, I'm really nervous now. I'm afraid I'm going to get fired. And you're right. That's a really great practice to do all throughout the day. You know, the Catholic priests, they pray, you know, I think it was 6 times a day. I can't remember, but it is literally set. You know, it's like 5 o'clock in the morning and then 9 o'clock and then 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock and then nighttime prayer at 9, and dude, they're out, right? And the nighttime prayer is the most important prayer because it's a time of repentance. And to repent doesn't mean to feel badly about what you did. It means to revise. If you look at it through the Greek translation, it means to revise.
Right.
And that's the time that you get inside your imagination and you change what happened and you see it the way you wanted it to go. Right. Now, here's a question for you. And you and I have touched on this before. People will say, well, then what is the difference between illusion and delusion? When are we delusional? But I don't see how we could call revision delusional. Tell me what you think about that.
No. I mean, delusion is losing touch with reality. That's what a delusion truly is, right?
But how do you, some people will say, you're just out of your mind, you know, revision. That happened. Like what happened? Don't be like this. You know, don't act like it didn't happen. We're not saying that. Acknowledge it. Just revise it.
You're just saying that you're the creator of your universe, right? And not in the, you know, we're God and we create the universe. But truly how you want to feel about something you have a lot of control over. But the only way you have control over it is to re-narrate what happened.
Exactly. I think it is recognizing when you revise, you have to recognize what you did wrong or what right. went wrong or what felt wrong. Exactly. And that's why you revise it. So it is the recognition.
Right. It's yeah. different than writing a story, you know, writing a book. Do you know how many times someone has revised a book before you read it? They revised it 1,000 times. It didn't change the essence of the book. It just made the book more readable or grammatically correct or mechanically correct.
Relatable. Yeah, relatable.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get it and say, hey, I thought I want the character to do this, but instead I want the character to do something different. And you change what the character does. And so we are our own author, our own books, we're the own producer of our own movies, whatever analogy you want to use, we're in control of that. So when people say, are you being delusional? I'm saying you don't want control, is what you're saying. You want things just to happen, and you want them to happen in your favor without you doing much to make that happen. And that's more delusional than actually re-narrating something.
Re-narration, to me, is taking responsibility for our thoughts and our actions that we have about others, and not being a victim to whether Johnny looked at you cross-eyed. Right. And whether or not, you know, Susie was talking smack about you, you revise it. Why do you think those things? And if Susie was talking things about you, whatever it may be, or Johnny did, forgive him and forgive right. yourself.
And so it's really a switching, it's changing perspective, right? Re-narration is changing perspective. So I had a client, he's struggling, he's a young guy, you know, he's in college and struggling with, you know, my friends don't consider me. And I said, what do you mean? You know, he gets really depressed about it. He says, well, they, you know, they go and study and they don't invite me, or they go to parties and they don't invite me. And I said, okay, do you say yes when they do? Well, no. Oh, so maybe they decided that they didn't want to be rejected by you, because every time they asked, you said no. And that's a form of rejection for them.
That is a light bulb moment for everybody, what you just said. That is so profound.
Right?
How many times do we not see ourselves in what we do, right. and then we think we're being rejected by others when we reject ourselves?
Right. And so when he thought so it, right, I never saw it that way. So maybe they don't ask me because I've always said no. And I said yes. So they're basically honoring your wishes, and they don't even bother you with it anymore, because they don't want to be rejected anymore either.
And he sends the message out there that says, push back. I'm afraid, or I feel a little bit socially insecure, but either way, right. what they read is, I'm not interested in y'all.
I'm not interested in y'all. I don't mm-hmm. want to do what you guys are doing. And so that's when he has to re-narrate, you know, that's not delusional. It's him taking control over his own rejection.
I like that. That is very empowering. And so first we have to recognize what you and I were talking about. The minute that we start to react, we start to feel badly.
Yeah.
You know, we go in, we get anxious, we want to cry, we want to vomit, we want to do whatever it is that we want to do. We're crazy. You know, God, I just need a glass of wine. I need to talk to 40,000 of my friends. I need to tell everybody what happened to me. No, we need to stop right there. Now, you talk about mindfulness and journaling. I think it's great. And everybody ought to get on Amazon and get the thing called a giant notebook. And I think it's like 600 ruled pages. Let me tell you, it's beautiful to be able to just write in if that's what you want to do. But meditation is just being with yourself. That's all meditation is, right? Because right. when you're with yourself in meditation, you contact that quote unquote, what we call higher power. We hear the voice of God, if you will. That voice of God is your inner voice. That's, you know what I'm saying? And I can't put it into words because, you know, pretty soon what I'm doing is I'm trying to put something in a box, and that's not what I want to do. But everybody knows that voice that speaks to us. The one that says, nobody's rejecting you. You were just really hurt. Do you remember this experience? And usually if we can stay with that, not try and cover up, not get up from meditation and not put the journal aside, we start to find, you know what? I really hurt. And I didn't realize I was carrying that with me.
Right.
And all of those beliefs that we heaped on top of that make you put your shit down in the store and walk out.
Right.
And then when you start to look, you start to say, okay, I get it. It all begins and ends with me.
Right. Right. And so this young guy that has this issue, we identified that mom disappeared on him. Right.
When? Like when he was young?
He was one. Not because
abandoned him?
No, not because she left, but because something really tragic happened to her and she emotionally pulled away.
Oh, okay.
Right. So he's not used to people emotionally caring for him. And he has a really hard time letting people do that. So basically what he does is he rejects people before they reject him because he was rejected for so long, blah, 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 blah. So a lot of this was very early that he got this message that you can't really trust people to take care of you. And it wasn't because mom was bad. And so sometimes when we don't have the big tragic thing in our life happen, we feel like, well, why do I feel this way? There must be something wrong with me, right? When the reality is
I'm not enough. I hear that a lot from people whose parents like emotionally abandoned them. I'm not enough.
Right. Yeah. And so this kid, he doesn't know this, but when we start talking about it, he's like, yeah, I've never really been close to my mom. I know they're there and they love me, but I don't feel it. You know, and so as we started talking through his life, I understood where this came from and what's happening and what we need to do to fix it. But, you know, can people do that without therapy? Absolutely. But they have to be extraordinarily mindful. And mindfulness is about taking what's internal and making it external so you can see it. So you can see it.
Well, but the internal is actually reflected in the external.
Oh, absolutely.
So we have to pay attention to the external and say,
right.
It's like when you're in a bad mood, you're fighting with your boyfriend or girlfriend or whoever you're with, and you get in the car and you're pissed off and everybody is flipping you off and honking at you. And you're like, it's like you run into every asshole on the road because of your energy. Pay attention, right? The external reflects your internal. Okay. This is good. Keep going.
No, that was my keystone right there. That was a good nugget I had for tonight. It's really the process. You know, I think I may have shared this on another podcast, so forgive me for those who've heard this before, but it's my classic. You know, our eyes are designed physically to look externally. They're not designed to look internally. Right? You can't turn your eyeballs on the back, you know, into your brain and see what's going on, right?
That is actually a medical fact. I was actually studying how the optic nerves cross over just last week and looking at that. And I was fascinated with the reflection. The eye simply reflects. The eye does.
Right. That's it.
Yes.
And so that's not far off from how we are emotionally, right? So we have to have something. The only way you can see your face, the only way you can see what your face looks like is by to look at a reflection of yourself in a mirror that bounces back to you what you see, what you are, what people see you.
The light. And light is energy. Exactly.
Right. And so that's why this external process, the process of getting what's going on with you out, is so important so that you can see, you know, proverbially, I should say, what's happening so that you can then change the perspective, the narrative, or whatever it is to gain control over what's going on with you internally.
I like that. That's very, very powerful. I think that the nugget that I took from this, and I like that, everybody's got a phone. And if you've got a flip phone, I can't help you. I don't remember how a flip phone even works.
Right.
But I will tell you, you've got some sort of a device. And if you don't, then get a little tiny book calendar.
Yeah.
Or program your subconscious mind. Tell yourself every hour on the hour, I'm going to remind myself to write down where I am, what I'm feeling.
Exactly.
You only have to write down a few words. And the experiences that you have, get in your phone and type it out.
Right.
Yeah. And that is before you text message your friend
that,
you know, Larry is an asshole, right? Larry looked at me sideways and I think he hates me. Before you do any of that, before you buy your own BS, and you write down in what you're feeling.
And this is a thing I do with my younger people, because younger people don't write anything anymore, right? They all are texting and snapping and Instagramming. They use emojis. So every hour they just put an emoji.
I love that.
So it doesn't have to be this long drawn out. You got to write a dissertation about how you feel. It could be just popping in an emoji, you know, and you go back and see that, you know, a lot of times people don't realize how positive their life truly is. They might have 10 emojis that are all happy and 2 sad ones. And they'll tell me my day sucked. I'm like, because on there, it seems like your day was pretty good, except for 2 hours of it.
And I'll tell you, a very powerful practice is when you wake up, everybody grabs their phone. Grab your phone and write in your calendar or send yourself an emoji, today's a great day.
Right,
yeah. It will literally change your day.
Absolutely.
When you state that within the first 10 minutes of waking up, because you're still in that sleep state, your subconscious mind accepts it. Today is a great day. Today is going to be a great day. Today is a great day.
Right.
And then because you can see it in a Google calendar. If you click on your calendar, 8 o'clock, it'll say, or 7 o'clock, whatever time you wake up, five, whatever. It'll say, today's a great day at the top, right? So as you click 11 o'clock and you're like, Larry looked at me sideways, you're going to go, but today is a great day. And you know what? It's probably because what I'm thinking when I go home tonight, I'm going to revise. I'm going to look at all this and I'm going to revise, right? And pretty soon you get into a habit, right, of thinking in every hour on the hour, today's a great day. Oh, Larry looked at me weird. I wonder if Larry had a fight with his girlfriend today.
Or anything.
Or maybe they've got, maybe there's problems with their child. Or maybe, you know, maybe he's sick. Maybe he has the flu. Maybe his mother yelled at him. Who cares what it is? But you know what? It's not necessarily about me. It's about how I perceive it. And then we get into a place of smiling at Larry. Hey, Larry, are you okay? I just kind of picked something up. I just wanted to tell you, hey, or whatever, right? Send a positive thought to Larry. And the next thing you know, Larry's like, oh, you know, yeah, I whatever. No, dude, everything's good. I'm just super busy. You know, sorry. You go back to your desk the next time Larry looks at you like that, you go, Larry's super busy. Not Larry hates me and he's going to tell the boss that I'm an awful coworker and I'm going to get fired.
Right. You realize it's not about you.
Exactly. And that's how you begin to change your programming and really become mindful and aware of self. I like it. So is there anything you want to say to wrap this podcast up?
You know, people always ask me because, you know, sometimes my happiness is annoying to people. I don't have a problem with it, but that's fine. And so someone asked me, do you ever have a bad day? And I had to think about it. And I said, no, I don't. I don't ever have a bad day. I have bad moments in the day, but I do have a good day every day. And so I process the moments and I let them be what they are. And magically, they go away. I come up with solution. I come up with, I can't handle it. I can't deal with it. Or it's not something that can be solved right now. And I move on to the next happy moment. So
I like that.
I just don't ever have a bad day. I just have bad moments in the day. That's it. And so if people can take nothing else from that is that, like you said, at the beginning of the day, I already know my day is going to be good and it's going to end well. And things happen in between. I let those things happen and they have no power because I let them happen.
I think our next podcast should be about how to turn the idea about your day around, because that's a very powerful thing to be able to do. Really, to recognize where you are and what you're thinking about your day and to stop in that moment and go, you know what? No, today is a really good day. I'm healthy. I'm alive. I can speak. I've got 2 good hands. I can work. I can think and I can love and I can speak a positive word. I can think a positive thought. So how can I make this a better day? I think that's a great podcast for our next one. It follows right with this. Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for joining me today, as always. And everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you got something out of it. If you'd like to talk to Dr. Mari or me, you can go to my website, jocelynlive.com. All participants of the Jocelyn Live podcast have been thoroughly vetted and agree to discuss personal information on this podcast. Each participant is offered a referral to therapy if needed. No information given should be considered medical or mental treatment or advice. Thank you all for joining us. If you're interested in joining our podcast or you would like to participate in a podcast, please email info@jocelynlive.com.